Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Carolyn Reinick-Wolf, who's a partner in the law firm of Abrams & Fensterman, where she is the director of the firm's mental health law practice, concentrating in the areas of mental health and healthcare law. She's also the founder and president of Campus Behavioral Health Risk Consultants and is a former hospital administrator and director of Hospital Risk Management. And also joining us is John J. Donahue III, a professor of law at Stanford Law School and research associate in the National Bureau of Economic Research. He has written numerous publications on gun control policy, and is the author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Carolyn Reinick-Wolf and John J. Donahue III.
Hi. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let me begin with you, Carolyn. Once again, we're at the deadly intersection of mental health and easy access to automatic firearms. Obviously, the April 30th meeting at the apartment building, which later ended up being the crime scene where three young Chinese students were hacked to death by the shooter who ended up killing seven people, including himself, and wounding 13 others. On April 30th, I think seven Santa Barbara deputies visited him because of phone calls from concerned parents and therapists. And yet they were not able to determine. Obviously, one can't expect police to be psychiatrists, but they weren't able to determine that he was a danger to society. And the shooter himself, in his manifesto, breathed a sigh of relief that they didn't come in and search the place and find the weapons and ammunition and therefore destroy his plan to massacre people. So, again, what's your sense of that failure and how can it be addressed and redressed?
Well, I think the laws have to change. I think we need, in light of all of these tragedies we've seen in the last several years among young people, the laws need to change and sort of shift the balance between individual rights and privacy and the safety and security of the community. I think we need to begin to give law enforcement more latitude when they respond to these calls and to allow more information to be exchanged back and forth from family members who are concerned about their loved ones when they're exhibiting symptoms or saying things or writing things that are of concern and are a potential danger to themselves and to other people.
And John Donahue, this is a bit like a kind of grim version of Groundhog Day. Every time we talk, there's been a massacre, and they happen frequently, obviously. But my recollection is that the Virginia Tech massacre was preceded by a similar visit of people looking into the mental health of the shooter in that incident, and yet he was able to buy weapons, as was Elliot Rodger.
Yes, the Virginia Tech system was yet another one of the cases where there was ample evidence of a severe mental illness. In that case, there was a different sort of breakdown. In the Virginia Tech case, he actually should have been on the list of proscribed purchasers so that he would not have been able to secure the weapons that he used in that massacre. But Virginia at the time was rather lax in transmitting that information, and it never got into the system. Virginia has actually tried to improve the way in which people who are identified in the very narrow class of individuals who are preempted to buy guns by virtue of their mental illness get classified into the system. But what we need to do is not only ensure that once you do meet the criteria for being a prohibited purchaser, the information gets into the system, but we also need to greatly expand the number of prohibited purchasers, if the truth be told. If we really want to take measures to prevent major shooting tragedies, much more has to be done to keep guns away from people who do pose a great risk to themselves and to others.
But the NRA spends a lot of time on Capitol Hill reducing the effectiveness of the ATF. It took them 7 years to even get a leader, and also the FBI. So they're the ones that seem to be trying to stop any kind of list on people who buy guns.
Well, you have to remember that more crime means more sales for gun merchants in the U.S. So the NRA has a very strong vested interest in trying to prevent anything that will either limit sales to criminals or reduce crime in other dimensions. The 8 years of Bill Clinton's administration were horrible years for the NRA because crime fell so dramatically that gun sales fell very dramatically. And so they definitely do not have the same interest that the American public has in trying to reduce the amount of crime. And in fact, they benefit directly by anything that elevates the fears and concerns of the public at large. Again, you listen to the NRA and their solution to the problem of things like the shooting in Santa Barbara is to encourage, you know, the sorority sisters to carry around more weapons. It really is not a sensible way of dealing with this particular problem.
Again, Carolyn Reinick-Wolf, a partner in the law firm of Abrahams and Fensterman, where she's director of the firm's mental health law practice, and she's also the founder and president of Campus Behavioral Risk Consultants. Tell me, Caroline, about protocols that you know about that could have been in place to prevent this killing, given the failure of the police. And obviously, as I mentioned, we can't expect our police to be psychiatrists.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, my concern is that every time we have one of these tragedies, the main issue we should be talking about is mental health treatment, being proactive, being being, you know, able to intervene sooner, being preventive. And it always gets diverted to the issue of gun control. And not that that isn't something important and something we need to do, but I think as a society in this country, we need to start to look at how important and how much the main issue is mental health. We need to fund it. We need to set up programs to intervene sooner. We have a private psychiatric intervention team in my practice. So we can go in and spend more time. We go in knowing what the background is and what the concerns of the family are. We get information from the family that the law doesn't allow to happen very often when people get hospitalized or are in treatment, all of our confidentiality laws, which are really used as a wall between loved ones and people who have most information and history to not be able to share with those who are in a position to intervene early and provide treatment. So the issue, you know, the subject needs to be about making mental health a priority, fund it, do education and training. There's a lot of misinformation out there about what our laws really are and what the exceptions to these laws are and how they can be useful. And we need to have more ability to intervene privately with the goal of getting people the treatment that they need.
But in terms of the broad societal responsibility, you mentioned that gun control is the issue that comes up when these mass shootings take place and that there should be more focus on psychiatric help to prevent such tragedies. It also seems to me that while the NRA has plenty to be blamed for, in many ways, I think culturally, Hollywood, where I'm calling you from, is also to blame with these endless movies with people poking guns and TV shows. There's hardly a TV show without somebody running around poking a gun, opening doors, and all this kind of macho nonsense. I mean, let me just read you what from the manifesto of this shooter, to give you a sense of what I'm trying to get at here in terms of the cultural acceptance of guns. Guns are something that solve problems, that make you a man. The Gun Maker Cult on its website page, talks about the founder. Abe Lincoln may have freed all men, but Sam Colt made them equal. And clearly this shooter felt the possession of a gun made him a man. They're just quoting what he wrote. After I picked up the handgun, I brought it back to my room and felt a new sense of power. I was now armed. Who's the alpha male now, bitches? I thought to myself regarding all of the girls who'd looked down on me in the past. So do you accept that thesis that we as a society, as a culture, have turned guns not into instruments of shame, but instruments of power.
I think that's true. I think, in fact, we have done that. I think we also now have a society that is so unrealistic about what guns do. You know, the video games, the TV shows, you know, you shoot people today and they don't die. They come back tomorrow. So I think, you know, the young people aren't realistic about what guns do. And yes, maybe it creates this sense of power and manhood. Although, look at the more recent tragedies. They were stabbing. This person stabbed his roommate, that high school in Colorado. He came in stabbing people. So again, my argument would be, it's not just about the guns. It's about the sensitivity to violence. It's also about the fact that people need treatment in order to desensitize them and to get them, you know, to a sense of reality where they're not taking these actions.
And John Donahue III, a professor of law at Stanford Law School and author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. In terms of the NRA, one of the parents of the boy, the young man that was killed at the deli, he railed against the NRA and gutless, feckless politicians under the sway of the NRA. What's your sense in terms of culpability, not just to the NRA, but also to Hollywood and the general culture that glorifies guns and treats them as a means by which somebody can establish their manhood and settle their problems?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a very unfortunate part of our culture. And if you look at the people like Adam Lanza and Elliot Rogers, they are the sort of feckless men who do aggrandize themselves through acquisition of arms, which is obviously very unfortunate. But I think that there are, you know, so many problems here that need to be addressed. Obviously, the NRA has a lot to be blameworthy about. But as Caroline mentioned, there is this broader problem of, you know, violence on the part of mentally disturbed individuals. Although, again, we see that for Elliot Rogers, this was a person coming from a family that had a lot of access to treatment and was a wealthy family. I mean, he was driving around a BMW. So the normal concerns about a poor individual not having access to mental health treatment were not invoked in this case. And, of course, the Adam Lanza situation was very similar, a very affluent family. But there you saw the hallmarks of the sort of NRA attitude operating in a very dangerous and damaging way, where the mother was actually sort of miming NRA attitudes about the value of having guns and was actually planning on buying another gun for Adam Lanza for Christmas just a few weeks after the tragedy that occurred there. So we do need to work on many different fronts to address the violence problem. But one thing I think is important to get out there is just the message of how useless guns are so much of the time. If you listen to the NRA, you would think, boy, if you have a gun, you're safe, you're going to be protected. But a huge percentage of people who actually do get shot or killed or otherwise severely injured in violent crime do have guns, and they're completely feckless in addressing the attacks on them. The real serious violent criminals disarm you before you have an opportunity to use a gun. So I think it's important to get that message out there. Having a gun for self-protection most of the time is a completely useless waste of your money and does pose a danger to yourself and others.
And Carolyn Reinick-Wolf, in terms of the parents, and just for disclosure, I know the father of the shooter, and I actually had him on my program once. He'd made a feature documentary about how different cultures around the world see God. He's a filmmaker. But the fact that they were able to afford therapists, et cetera, and yet there was this horrible failure, what are the deficiencies there? What are the structural problems there?
Well, I think the laws need to change. You know, the confidentiality laws need to be modified. The legal standard for involuntary commitment is very restrictive. They were designed for the years when there were very serious abuses in the mental health system and psychiatric hospitals. That, for the most part, does not exist anymore. It's outlived its usefulness. So that has to be changed in order to address what we're seeing in our society now and to, of course, have safeguards on those. But they need to yield to the community safety and security. There also is a lot of misinformation, and there are not a lot of attorneys out there. I mean, I'm really the only attorney who has a practice like this in the country, who specializes in mental health law and working with families and individuals to utilize the legal system and the clinical system as a team approach, to get people engaged and into treatment and work with families and educate them as to what services are available. What we can utilize is a different system to do psychiatric in-home interventions separate from law enforcement, who, again, are restricted by the legal system. In addition, we need much, much more, you know, funding for training and education so that people do know realistically what the system can offer in terms of assistance and help and education and what it can. And families really are at a loss to know how to navigate through the mental health system, the healthcare system, and so on, to get the intervention and the treatment that their loved ones need and that they're very familiar with and know they need.
But my understanding, Carolyn, is that Adam Lanza, the shooter that massacred all those students, apparently his mother tried to have him committed just 2 weeks before Adam Lanza massacred those school children at Sandy Hook Elementary School. But the beds were full, and instead they gave him a prescription of Zyprexa.
Right, which is an antipsychotic medication. And yes, that's another issue. Again, it comes down to funding and services. There are a shortage of psychiatric beds. There's a shortage of psychiatrists being trained in programs for mental health professionals to be trained. So that whole part of the system needs to expand also to accommodate those people who could benefit from treatment, need to be in treatment, and, you know, for whom we can intervene earlier on.
And John Donohue, just to Caroline's point about emptying the mental hospitals back when Ronald Reagan was governor here in California, it was under the notion that the people were being kept against their will and that it was done in terms of freedom of the individual and their rights as opposed to societal problems that followed. I mean, since Ronald Reagan emptied the mental hospital here in California, we've had parks in this state, you know, Santa Monica, the home of the homeless, full of clearly mentally ill people. So my sense is that they were just dumped on society, and how can anybody argue that they're better off?
Yeah, the treatment of the mentally ill in this country has been appalling, both in the earlier days of mistreatment in the mental hospitals and now the dumping of them out onto the street and also into our prisons. We sort of substituted mass incarceration of the mentally ill for mass incarceration of people convicted of crimes. And so our prisons have become, warehouses of the mentally ill as well. It's not a good system in almost any way that you define it. I would just throw one other point in there that, of course, all of the affluent countries around the world do have, similar problems of numbers of mentally ill individuals. But at least in terms of mass shootings, let me just throw out one success story. Australia, which used to have a higher rate of mass shootings than the United States, has not had a single one since they engaged in their very aggressive gun control after the 1995 shootings or 1996 shootings in Australia. So as an intermediate step between getting people into some sort of warehousing treatment you could just be sure to take away their guns. Think of what would have happened if the police had been authorized to go to Roger and say, we have to be sure that you don't have any weapons because we think you're a danger to yourself and others. As his manifesto showed, that would have put an end to the entire episode here.
So, Carolyn... go ahead.
I just want to be clear that, you know, we have enough stigma in this country that prevents people from going into treatment or staying in treatment, and that statistically people with serious mental illness are much more often the victims of violence than the perpetrators of violence. That doesn't take away from the need for mental health treatment in general, regardless of what the diagnosis is or what you call it. You know, there are still serious mental health issues in general that need to be addressed.
And just a quick comment on what happened here in California with under Governor Reagan. Has it gone too far in the opposite direction of just dumping people on the streets?
Yes. What happened was is we opened the doors to our chronic mental psychiatric hospitals, and there was nothing on the receiving end. There's no funding even today, or very little, for outpatient programs, outpatient therapists, support systems, case management. All of the different pieces of the puzzle that we put together are not available out there. So you open the doors and you put people back into the community, but you didn't offer them any support services or treatment. And that's where the system took a very serious failure turn to failure.
Well, Carolyn Reinick-Wolf, I thank you very much for joining us, as well as you, John Donahue.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Carolyn Reinick-Wolf, who's a partner in the law firm of Abrahams & Fensterman, where she is the director of the firm's mental health law practice, concentrating in the areas of mental health and healthcare law. She's also the founder and president of Campus Behavioral Health Risk Consultants and is a former hospital administrator and director of hospital risk management. And also joining us was John J. Donahue, the third, a professor of law at Stanford Law School and research associate in the National Bureau of Economic Research. He's written numerous publications on gun control policy and is the author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.